There is a specific geographic location on this earth which has served as God's focal point. As God looks at the earth, this particular geographic location is the center. That is the point of focus. That is the focal point. In fact, the history of this earth, as you go back into the past, as we look at the present and the future, to a great extent have revolved around this one particular geographic location. Very significant location, both in terms of history and what mankind has experienced, and certainly from God's perspective. The name of this particular location means the City of Peace. Yet, as you would look at the history of this particular location, you would have to conclude that the name was a misnomer, because this particular city has been anything but a city of peace. In fact, there is a reference that is made that describes this particular city in the book of Zechariah chapter 12 that really explains what this particular city has been. God says in Zechariah chapter 12 and verse 2, "Behold, I will make Jerusalem a cup of trembling unto all people round about," or a cup of poison, as it could also be rendered. He didn't say, you know, that Jerusalem was going to be viewed by everyone as a city of peace to everybody all around. He says, "I'll make Jerusalem a cup of trembling, a cup of poison to all the people round about." Coming on down in verse 3, "And in that day will I make Jerusalem a burdensome stone for all people. All that burden themselves with it shall be cut in pieces." Now, if you look at the history of Jerusalem, you would have to conclude that this statement has been borne out. Traditionally, those who have burdened themselves with Jerusalem have been cut in pieces. Jerusalem has been a burdensome stone. There was a recent article in the U.S. News and World Report that was headlined, "Mideast Cauldron." You know, a bubbling pot. Or perhaps you could say a trembling cup. Well, God says Jerusalem, of course, is at the focal point of that bubbling cauldron. The reason why the cauldron continues to bubble. The reason why the cauldron can do nothing but bubble, until it spills over, centers in Jerusalem, the city of peace. The city over whose, you know, in which area probably more wars have been fought in terms of that particular city, or over the particular matter of who's going to control that city. You go back even through the Middle Ages, that's what much of the Crusades were about. Oh, I know there were other factors involving trade and commerce and other factors, but the issue that was made, the emotional issue that was at the heart and core of it, was who was going to control Jerusalem. You can go back to various other points in history. We come on up even to our modern times, and we look at the point, at the place that Jerusalem has played in the history of mankind, coming on up until 1948 with Israel's declaration of independence, the subsequent partition of Jerusalem as the Arab Legion came into play right at the time Israel proclaimed their independence, and war broke out there in what had been the British Mandate of Palestine, and the British got out of it. You know, it was some of the Jews sarcastically referred to it as the twice promised land, because the British promised it to the Jews and they promised it to the Arabs. And then they had a mess. So they finally got out and turned it over to the United Nations, which has also found Jerusalem to be a burdensome stone and has not been able to come out any better. And all who have entangled themselves in that have come out the worse for it. And I think we found that. We find it in terms of international relations today, in terms of what is going on. Now, I would like for us to focus in today on God's focal point as He looks at the earth, from a geographic standpoint, Jerusalem. And I would like for us to understand some things about Jerusalem, both past, present, and the future. Understanding what lies ahead, and realizing the extent to which world affairs and world conditions and what is going to transpire in the world, both in the immediate future and in the long-term future on out into eternity, revolve around Jerusalem. Also looking back and understanding the extent to which the past history of Jerusalem has played an important role. Now, what role has Jerusalem played in the past, going all the way back? Let's notice a little bit of the beginning. In all of all places, we find a reference to that in the book of Acts. Acts chapter 3, in verse 21, we find a sermon that was being preached by the Apostle Peter. And in Acts chapter 3, verse 19, Peter says, "Repent you therefore and be converted, that your sins may be blotted out, when the times of refreshing shall come from the presence of the Lord." The times of refreshing, or the times of resurrection, is what he's talking about, the return of Christ. "And he shall send Jesus Christ, which before was preached unto you, whom the heaven must receive until the times of restitution of all things, which God has spoken by the mouth of all his holy prophets since the world began." Now, the time when Jesus Christ returns and establishes his government on the earth is called the time of restitution of all things, the time of restoration. So Jesus Christ is going to come, and he is going to restore all things. Now, what is going to happen when Jesus Christ comes back? How is it going to be? Well, you know, there are different places that describe that. One of the clearest is in Isaiah chapter 2 and verse 3, where it says, "For out of Zion shall go forth the law and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem." Now, Zion historically refers to the original part of Jerusalem, the original city of David. That was the name by which it was known. That's why movement to restore the Jewish homeland in the Middle East comes from, the Zionist movement as it's called, because Zion was the name of the city of David, which was the original part of Jerusalem. And so they called themselves Zionists in the sense that they were going back to Zion, to that original area. So anyone that thinks that the Jews are going to negotiate away and give away the original city of David, give away that specific portion of Jerusalem, which is called Zion, that original area, anybody that thinks they're going to negotiate that away doesn't know what they're talking about. You know, you just need to read a little bit about Jewish history and understand the emotional impact that city has. That every year in the synagogues on the Day of Atonement, at the conclusion of the service, right at 1900 years from the time of the destruction of Jerusalem in 70 AD, from that time on, every Day of Atonement service in a Jewish synagogue ended with the prayer, "Next year in Jerusalem." And if any of you remember seeing, you know, back on television, as perhaps probably many or most of us did, back in 1967, right after the Jew-Arab War, of the Six-Day War, when the Jews recaptured Jerusalem and saw the intensity of emotion and the excitement as they returned there to Jerusalem and to the Wailing Wall and to the original portion of Jerusalem. Anybody that thinks they're going to negotiate it away just doesn't understand. Now, we're told Jerusalem is going to be a burdensome stone. It's going to be a cup of trembling, a cup of poison. All right? Well, now here we see that the time is going to come when out of Zion will go forth the law, the word of the Lord, from Jerusalem. When Jesus Christ restores all things, the word of the Lord will go forth from Jerusalem. Now, if the word of the Lord is going to go forth from Jerusalem when Christ returns, and Christ is returning to restore all things, that the time of His return is called the times of restitution of all things, what does that bring to mind? That the law is once more going to go forth from Jerusalem. When did it go forth before? Has there ever been a time before? If we're talking about a restoration, if we're talking about the times of restitution of all things, the restoring of something, then here we have Jerusalem set as a focal point where the law of God, the government of God, shall go forth to the whole earth from that specific geographic location. Well, has the government of God, that, you see, this will mark the restoration of the government of God on this earth. Has the government of God been on this earth before? Well, yes, it was. God created the earth. He created it not in vain. He created it to be inhabited, as it is explained in the book of Isaiah. And God placed various beings on the earth. He placed angels. He placed a great archangel, Lucifer, over the earth. Now, notice the specific location where this Lucifer was placed, where God's government was being administered from. In Ezekiel chapter 28, beginning down in verse 12, thus says the Lord God, "You seal up the sum full of wisdom and perfect in beauty. You have been in Eden, the garden of God. Every precious stone was your covering, sardius, topaz, diamond, beryl, onyx, jasper, sapphire, emerald, carbuncle, gold. The workmanship of your tabrets and your pipes was prepared in you in the day you were created. You are the anointed cherub that covers, and I have set you so. You are upon the holy mountain of God." Now, where was the holy mountain of God? Well, the holy mountain of God was Mount Zion, which is where that was the seat of government. That was where, that is the physical location of the throne of David. And that will be the physical location from which Jesus Christ will rule. Now here we're told, that's called the holy mountain of God. Here we're told Lucifer was on the holy mountain of God, walked up and down in the midst of the stones of fire. You were perfect in your ways from the day that you were created, till iniquity was found in you. All right, going on, we're not going to go into all about Lucifer and the pre-Adamic world and the things that transpired and the destruction and all of the things that tie in with that. But the point that I want to emphasize is that God's government was extant upon the earth, that there was a location that served as the focal point of that government. It was called here Eden. It was the location where Eden was. It is called the Holy Mountain of God. That was the original place where the government of God, the law of God, went out to the whole earth. When Jesus Christ returns, He is going to restore all things. That will be the times of restitution. And what's going to happen? The word of the Lord will go forth from Jerusalem. The law of God will go forth from Mount Zion. And so, we find that this was the original location where God's government went forth to the earth. The mountain of God. This was the location of Eden. Back in the book of Genesis, chapter 2, we could go through, we find the eternal God planted a garden eastward in Eden, and there He put the man whom He had formed. And out of the ground He made to grow every tree that is pleasant to the sight and good for food, the tree of life also in the midst of the garden, and the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. A river went out of Eden to water the garden. From thence it was parted and became into four heads. And these are named Pison, which is that which encompasses the whole land of Havilah. This refers to the Ganges River, that area. The Gihon, which is the Nile. And the Tigris, which is the Hiddekel. And then the fourth river, the river Euphrates. God placed the man in the Garden of Eden. Now, Eden was a location, and there was a garden planted in Eden. Now, this was the geographic location. We find that that had been the original headquarters of the government of God in the pre-Adamic world, as we read in Ezekiel 28. That is when God created the earth, there was a place that was set aside, that this is where the government of God was exercised from. This was, in that sense, the capital, if you please. This was the location, the focal point, from where God's government was to emanate out to the earth. Then when, following the destruction of the pre-Adamic world and the creation that we read of, the things that we read of in Genesis chapters 1 and 2, when once again a restoration was made, that in that specific geographic location, God planted a garden and placed Adam and Eve there. Then Adam and Eve were expelled from that garden, and God set an angel there with a flaming sword, as we're told, back in Genesis chapter 3, verse 23, "Therefore the eternal God sent him forth from the Garden of Eden to till the ground from whence he was taken. So he drove out the man, and he placed at the east of the Garden of Eden cherubim and a flaming sword which turned every way to keep the way of the tree of life." Now, you know, you don't find any place on earth where there's a cherubim and a flaming sword guarding a particular spot. You know, what's happened to the Garden of Eden? Why aren't the angels still there governing it, guarding it? Well, what happened to the Garden of Eden? It got washed away, along with everything else, when Noah's flood came. You know, no need to guard it anymore. The cherubim were evidently there. They had their responsibility there up until the time of the Noahian flood. Subsequent to that time, there's been no longer a need for it because it was, it was destroyed. It wasn't there. It doesn't exist there anymore. And so we find that it ceased to function. Now, we pick up the story as we continue through the book of Genesis, and we find that after the flood of Noah at some subsequent date, that this geographic location came once again to play a significant role. In Genesis chapter 14, we read of an account that occurred when a confederation of kings, the Syrian confederation, got together, four kings, and they made war with the kings of Sodom and Gomorrah and the lands and the areas there. There was warfare, and Lot, who was the nephew of Abraham, was taken as a captive. Abraham got together his trained servants, and he pursued them, overtook the army. I'm paraphrasing here for the sake of time, Genesis 14. Overtook the army, defeated them, recaptured Lot and the family, and plus the wealth that they had had. Now we find, as we pick it up in verse 16 of Genesis 14, he brought back all the goods, and also brought again his brother Lot and his goods, and the women also, and the people. And the king of Sodom went out to meet him after his return from the slaughter of Chedorlaomer, and of the kings that were with him, the valley of Sheva, which is the king's dale, and Melchizedek, the king of Salem, brought forth bread and wine, and he was the priest of the Most High God. And he blessed him, Abraham, and said, "Blessed be Abram of the Most High God, possessor of heaven and earth, and blessed be the Most High God, which has delivered your enemies into your hands." And he, Abraham, gave him, Melchizedek, tithes of all. And the king of Sodom said, "Well, look, you give me the people, and you keep the goods." And Abraham said, "No, I don't want you going around saying you made me rich. I'm going to give you the whole thing." But we find here Abraham, or Abram as he was at that time, encountering a particular individual known as Melchizedek, whom we are told was the king of Salem. Now evidently, there was, at this particular time, Salem or Jerusalem. Jerusalem is the full name. It means city of Salem. Salem means peace. There was a particular government that was being exercised, at least in a limited way there, in the post-flood world, Melchizedek exercised as the priest of the Most High God, at least at certain times, dealt with Abram, undoubtedly dealt with Isaac and Jacob as well. We find that Jacob, later, we're not going to go into a sermon on tithing, but later Jacob mentioned that he would also pay tithes to God. God would deliver him and would bring him back. To whom would Jacob give his tithe? Well, undoubtedly to the same individual to whom Abraham gave his tithe, to Melchizedek, whom we read of in the book of Hebrews. Melchizedek was not just an ordinary human being. Far from it. Hebrews chapter 7 we read, verse 1, "For this Melchizedek, the king of Salem," so it's the same Melchizedek we read of in Genesis 14, "this Melchizedek, king of Salem, priest of the Most High God, who met Abraham returning from the slaughter of the kings and blessed him, to whom also Abraham gave a tithe of all, first being by interpretation king of righteousness." That's what Melchizedek means. King of righteousness. "And after that also king of Salem, which is," or means, "king of peace." Now Jesus Christ, we know, is called the Prince of Peace. Here's an individual that had that title. You know, it was called the King of Peace. Now, who was this individual? Was he an ordinary human being? Verse 3 of Hebrews 7. "Without father, without mother, without descent, having neither beginning of days nor end of life." So he didn't have a beginning and he didn't have an end. He did not have a human father and mother, "but made like unto the Son of God, abides," present tense, "abides a priest forever," continually. On and on. "Consider how great this man was, unto whom even the patriarch Abraham gave the tenth of the spoils." Well, coming on down, that's, I think, sufficient to illustrate the point that it mentions, for instance, back in Hebrews 5, "Christ glorified not himself to be made a high priest, but he that said unto him, You are my son, today have I begotten you. He said also in another place, You are a priest forever, after the order of Melchizedek." In verse 10, "called of God a high priest after the order of Melchizedek." Now we read in Hebrews chapter 7, in verse 3, that this Melchizedek abides, present tense, a priest continually. Well, of course, I think very evident, and there are other scriptures that bear on the subject, I'm not going to go through them all, but I think it's very evident, just even apparent reading, that Melchizedek was simply another name of Jesus Christ. We know that the one that became Jesus Christ certainly appeared at various times to deal personally with individuals in the time of the Old Testament, particularly prior to the time of Moses. We find the account in Genesis 18 of that being appearing along with two angels to meet Abraham in the plains of Mamre, sitting down and eating a meal with him, giving the birthright or blessings to him. We find other accounts. We find here in Genesis 14 that Abraham brought his tithe here to Melchizedek, who was at this particular time located at Salem, Jerusalem. So at some point in the post-flood world, according to Josephus, the Jewish historian, Melchizedek built Salem after the flood. Melchizedek was the one that was understood to have been responsible for the building of the city would probably more resemble what we would think of as like a castle or a small location of that sort, not a city in the sense we think of a large sprawling city, but a particular location like a castle-like building located there on Mount Zion. That was the original city in the post-flood world and was evidently used up until for a particular period of time, perhaps up through the lifetime of Jacob until Israel went down to Egypt. At some point, it was abandoned, was no longer used in that sense. When we pick up the story once again in the book of Joshua chapter 10, we find that it was occupied by another group of people. It had been occupied by Canaanites during the several hundred year interim. And in Joshua 10 verse 1, it came to pass when Adonizedek, the king of Jerusalem, heard how Joshua had taken Ai and had utterly destroyed it. Now, Adonizedek, the word Adonai means Lord in the Hebrew. Now, this particular individual, this Canaanite king, called himself the Lord of righteousness. Now, he obviously wasn't very apparent when you read the story and what happened to him. But the point was that after Melchizedek no longer resided or no longer used the city of Salem as a point of operation, a point of, let's say, a headquarters, so to speak, in dealing with the patriarchs, after it was no longer in use, it became occupied by the Canaanites, and the particular nature of the location was known by them, and the individual that set himself up as king there appropriated a title to which he was not entitled. He wasn't quite audacious enough to take the same title of Melchizedek, but he took what he considered the next best thing, Adonizedek, the Lord of righteousness. And he was the king of Jerusalem, or the king of the city of peace. He was the head of the Canaanite confederation. After Melchizedek left, he usurped the authority in Salem and claimed that title. And so he was allowed to strut around with this for a short while. But we find that he met his end when Joshua invaded the promised land. When we go on through the story in the book of Judges, we find, according to the book of Judges, chapter 19, that Jerusalem, the city of Jerusalem, was during the time period of the Judges occupied by Canaanites, occupied by Jebusites. It was known also as Jebus, as well as Jerusalem here according to Judges chapter 19 and verse 10. It was occupied by the Jebusites, and they continued to occupy that during the time period of the Judges. This is not, God had not at that point reclaimed that particular city. In fact, the reclamation of the city of Jerusalem as the place from which God's government would go out, awaited a very significant individual in the plan of God, a man whose family was established as kings, as an everlasting dynasty. We read in the book of 2 Samuel chapter 5 of David becoming king over all Israel. 2 Samuel chapter 5 and verse 1. Then came all the tribes of Israel to David unto Hebron and spoke, saying, Behold, we are your bone and your flesh. In times past, when Saul was king over us, you were he that led out and brought in Israel. The Lord said to you, You shall feed my people Israel. You shall be a captain over Israel. So all the elders of Israel came to the king, to Hebron, and King David made a league with them in Hebron before the Eternal, and they anointed David king over Israel. David was 30 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 40 years. In Hebron he reigned over Judah 7 years and 6 months, and in Jerusalem he reigned 33 years over all Israel and Judah. The king and his men went up to Jerusalem unto the Jebusites, the inhabitants of the land, who had spoken to David, saying, Except you take away the blind and the lame, you shall not come in here. Thinking David cannot come in here. You know, they said, Look, We're so invulnerable. This is such a citadel that we're going to just put the lame and the blind up there on the gate, on the walls to defend the city. And there's no way you're going to get in here. Nevertheless, David took the stronghold of Zion, the same is the city of David. So that is the specific geographic location to which Zion refers, specifically to the city of David, which is the original portion, the original citadel there. There was the original portion, the mount on which that was located. David said on that day, whosoever gets up to the gutter, which was the only water supply, this was a water shaft. The only water supply was a pool that was called the Virgin's Pool, and there was a 35-foot shaft which hit the water coming down here that ran through the rock there to the citadel. And this supplied the water for Jerusalem or for Zion, the city of David, which is only a small portion of the present-day city of Jerusalem. And David said, whosoever gets up to the gutter, knowing, you know, that that was the only way they were going to get in, a lot smarter than trying to storm the walls, and smites the Jebusites, and he shall be the chief and the captain. So David dwelt in the fort and called it the city of David. David built round about from Milo and inward. So the city was expanded, and David, it became the capital city, David's conquest of Jerusalem. And when David began his rule over Israel, this was the first thing that happened, was Jerusalem was made the capital. This is the first time that Jerusalem served as the capital of Israel. Prior to that time, they were in various locations. They were at Shiloh for a while. They were at Gilgal. At various locations, but two or three different ones. But there was not a permanent location. Now Jerusalem was once again chosen as David became the one to exercise the authority sitting on that throne that has become known as that throne of David, the one from which Jesus Christ will reign, the one on which Jesus Christ will sit when he returns, as prophesied back in the book of Luke, you know, when the angel appeared to Mary, and he said, he shall sit upon the throne of his father David. So this dynasty was established. It came all the way down right here in this location. We find that the city was greatly built up, was greatly expanded as the years went on. We read in 1 Kings chapter 10, for instance, of the way in which King Solomon enhanced and built the city, that it was built up. Of course, the temple, the most beautiful, magnificent building, probably the most magnificent building that has ever been built, was located there, sitting up above the city of David, actually, on Mount Moriah. And the king made silver to be in Jerusalem. This is 1 Kings 10:27. The king made silver to be in Jerusalem as stones, and cedars to be as the sycamore trees that are in the vale for abundance. We read here of all the things that Solomon built up, the splendor that he built in Jerusalem, the way that he built the great palaces and the great buildings and built up the city of Jerusalem, the great wealth and splendor as Jerusalem became of that point to which all the earth sought. We read in verse 24 here in 1 Kings 10, and all the earth sought to Solomon to hear his wisdom which God had put in his heart. Solomon's name means peace. So Solomon was the king whose name meant peace, reigning in the city of peace. And there was a time of peace. And all the earth sought to Solomon. The word of the Lord did go forth from Jerusalem at that time. And people all over sought to King Solomon to understand the way of God and the truth of God. Now we find that Solomon allowed his heart to be turned away, and he turned away from the truth of God, the truth that he had known, and the truth that he had taught. As we continue on, we find that after Solomon's death, the northern 10 tribes split off, formed their own government with a subsequent establishment of a capital in Samaria, that Jerusalem remained as the capital of Judah only. Continuing on down until we read the story finally occurred as it is recorded in 2 Kings 25, in verse 7, with the invasion of Nebuchadnezzar, the Babylonian king, to Jerusalem, to Judah, 587 B.C. They slew the sons of Zedekiah before his eyes, and put out the eyes of Zedekiah, and bound him with fetters of brass, and carried him to Babylon. And in the fifth month, on the seventh day of the month, which is the 19th year of the king, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came Nebuzaradan, captain of the guard, a servant of the king of Babylon, unto Jerusalem. And he burnt the house of the Eternal, and the king's house, and all the houses of Jerusalem, and every great man's house burnt he with fire. And all the army of the Chaldees that were with the captain of the guard broke down the walls of Jerusalem round about. Now, the rest of the people that were left in the city and the fugitives that fell away to the king of Babylon with the remnant of the multitude did Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, carry away. He left the poor of the land to be vine dressers and husbandmen. And he carried away the pillars of brass that were in the temple of the Lord, the bases, the brazen sea. They broke it in pieces, carried the brass to Jerusalem. The various pots and various things that had been made, various artifacts were all taken away as war booty, taken away to Babylon. So Jerusalem was destroyed. Jerusalem, which had been the focal point, which had been as a focal point of God's government right at the very beginning, from where God's government went forth to the earth, and then later that location from which Adam and Eve were driven out, later the location from which Melchizedek administered God's government and gave forth God's law, later the location that David captured from the Canaanites and once again restored to the place as the city of God's government, the place from whence God's government went out. Now we find the city destroyed. Well, as we continue on in the book of Ezra, we find that the city was once again restored. Ezra chapter 1 and verse 1, first year of Cyrus, king of Persia, the word of the Lord, that the word of the Lord by the mouth of Jeremiah might be fulfilled, the Lord stirred up the spirit of Cyrus, king of Persia, made a proclamation throughout all his kingdom, and put it into writing, saying, thus says Cyrus, king of Persia, the Lord God of heaven has given to me all the kingdoms of the earth, and he has charged me to build him a house at Jerusalem, which is in Judah. So Cyrus gave a commandment down in verse 7. The king brought forth the vessels of the house of the Lord, which Nebuchadnezzar had brought forth out of Jerusalem, and put them in the house of his God. Even these did Cyrus, king of Persia, bring forth. And so they were sent, brought up from Jerusalem, from Babylon unto Jerusalem. And as we come on back in chapter 4, verse 12, here we read a part of the decree. Be it known unto the king, this is when, well, this is Zerubbabel came back from Cyrus to build Jerusalem, to restore Jerusalem, came back to rebuild the temple. And of course, after they got back there, the Samaritans began to stir up trouble. They didn't want to see things restored at Jerusalem once again, the enemies of the people of God. And so they wrote an accusation unto King Artaxerxes, trying to get work on the temple stopped. And here's what they wrote. Be it known unto the king that the Jews which came up from you are coming to Jerusalem, building the rebellious and bad city. They've set up the walls thereof, and they've joined the foundations. You know, you can make anything sound bad. That's what they were sent back to do. They were sent back to build a city. He makes it sound bad. You know, they're building that rebellious and bad city. You know, they've built the foundations thereof. You don't want them to do that, do you, king? So they go on and their accusation is made. And he said, look, they get this city built. They probably will quit paying their taxes. You won't be getting any money from them. You need to go in there and we're just concerned about you, king. We don't want to see you lose any money. We think you ought to go in there and kill all that bunch. Now, you know, this was their accusation. Down in verse 15, further accusation. That search may be made in the book of the records of your fathers. So you shall find in the book of the records and know that this city is a rebellious city and hurtful unto kings and provinces that they've moved sedition within the same of old time. For which cause was this city destroyed? So anyway, decree was made, give you now a commandment to cause these men to cease, that this city be not builded until another commandment shall be given from me. So then ceased the work of the house of God, which is at Jerusalem. In verse 24, it ceased until the second year of the reign of Darius of Persia. Then in chapter 5, we find that Haggai and Zechariah came along, stirred up the people under Zerubbabel, and they began to finish the house of God, which is at Jerusalem. They began to do that at the same time appealing to the king and getting things restored. So we find that Jerusalem was restored. The city was rebuilt and continued as the capital city of the Jewish state down until the time of Christ. But it wasn't destined to continue in that way. Jesus Christ understood that. That's why we read in Matthew chapter 23. We read the attitude Jesus Christ had, what he recognized, Matthew chapter 23 and verse 35. He was speaking to the people in Jerusalem of his day, and he says, upon you may come all the righteous blood shed upon the earth, from the blood of righteous Abel unto the blood of Zacharias, the son of Barachias, whom you slew between the temple and the altar. Truly I say unto you, all these things shall come upon this generation. O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, you that kill the prophets and that stone them which are sent unto you. How often would I have gathered your children together, even as a hen gathers her chickens under her wings, but you would not. Behold, your house is left unto you desolate. But I say unto you, you shall not see me henceforth till you shall say, blessed is he that comes in the name of the Lord. So here Jesus Christ was saying, as he approached the end of his ministry, just in the final closing days of his ministry, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, how often have I sought to gather you? How often have I watched over you and have sought to look after you? But you would not. You wouldn't hearken. You wouldn't listen. You wanted to go your own way. You wanted to do your own thing. You have refused the government that I have made available to you. Therefore, you're going to be destroyed. You're going to be left desolate. He refers to that in verse 2 of Matthew 24. Matthew 24, 2, Jesus said unto them, to the disciples, see you not all these things? Truly I say unto you, there shall not be left here one stone upon another that shall not be thrown down. You know, Jerusalem was destroyed, and frankly, there's going to be a greater destruction yet to come. Jerusalem was devastated by the Romans in 70 A.D. They attempted to raise it to the ground, to actually change the name of the city, and to dedicate it to a pagan god, and to prohibit the living there of any Jews. And this was the destruction of Jerusalem in 70 A.D. in the final generation later, the final destruction at Masada of any attempt to restore the Jewish state. And so the Jews were driven out of that land. And the Romans, of course, occupied it. They ruled there in the Middle East. And for the next couple of hundred years or so, 300 years, and then as the Roman Empire divided itself into the Western and Eastern Roman Empires, Eastern Roman Empire, being known as the Byzantine Empire, continued to govern that area on down until first the Arabs in the aftermath of the advent of Islam began to sweep across the Middle East, swept into Jerusalem in the 7th century A.D. and overthrew the Byzantine administration and actually established their sovereignty over that area. Then this continued on down for a period of time, a few hundred years, and the Ottoman Turks began to come in from the east. They were also Islamic and established their empire actually as overlords over the Arabs. And you, of course, had all of the wars in the meantime, the Crusaders, the various attempts of the Europeans to come in and to recapture Jerusalem, various battles, various things. There are even Crusader forts and things that are there in that area. Attempts, there was actually a European state that was established there that was ruled for a period of a number of years right there in the Middle East by the Crusaders, finally overthrown. The various fighting dominated by the Muslim Turks, the Ottoman Turks, on down until 1917 when the British entered and under General Allenby entered into Jerusalem. Now this in itself fulfilled an interesting prophecy. We know, of course, that as we read back in the book of Daniel as to when Jerusalem fell originally to the Babylonians. Daniel 1:1 tells us, in the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, came Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, unto Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand. This is when Jerusalem was first captured by the Gentiles, by Nebuchadnezzar, and remained dominated by Gentile governments from that time on. Because even at the time when Zerubbabel restored it, he was under Persian rule, later under Greek rule. And then even during the time of independence by the Maccabees, they were dominated either by the Syrians in the north or the Egyptians in the south, later the Romans establishing sovereignty over the entire thing. So there has not been really Israelite rule in a totally independent sense. Now, we find, it's an interesting statement here as to the exact time that it fell. Jerusalem fell in December of 604 B.C. In fact, it can be dated to the day. There are other scriptures that do give the date. It was December the 9th, 604 B.C., when Jerusalem fell to Nebuchadnezzar. That's very interesting, because you see, it was exactly to the day, 2,520 years later, seven times, seven prophetic times, 2,520 years exactly to the day, on December the 9th, 1917, that General Allenby entered Jerusalem and freed it from the Ottoman Turks. Exactly 2,520 years that Jerusalem was dominated in that way. Then the British administered it up until 1948, and the Jews proclaimed an independent Jewish state at that time. Jerusalem, of course, being divided in 1948, partitioned between the old and the new city up until 67 when they reconquered it. So we find that Jerusalem has been anything but the city of peace as we look at the things that have transpired, at the events that have happened, and all of the things that have occurred in the history of Jerusalem. Now, let's look on into the future a little bit. What's going to happen in the future to Jerusalem? Right now, the cauldron still bubbles and boils over there in the Middle East. There is yet a future day that is coming that is described in Joel chapter 3, verse 1, "For behold, in those days and in that time, when I shall bring again the captivity of Judah and Jerusalem." There is coming again a captivity of Judah and Jerusalem. There is coming a war that they're going to lose. "And I will also gather all nations and will bring them down into the valley of Jehoshaphat and will plead with them there for my people and for my heritage Israel, among whom they have scattered among the nations and parted my land." Now, we find here this valley of Jehoshaphat, which is actually a valley that is between the Mount of Olives on the one side and Mount Zion on the other. The valley of Jehoshaphat is the valley in between Jerusalem and the Mount of Olives. And this is actually where the battle is going to take place. That's where Christ is going to destroy the armies at His return, in the valley of Jehoshaphat, which is the valley between Mount Zion and the Mount of Olives, where Jesus Christ is going to be. But the time is going to come when there's going to come a subsequent captivity. And all nations are going to be gathered there against Jerusalem. As we read, coming on down, as it describes here in verse 6, the children also of Judah and the children of Jerusalem have you sold unto the Grecians, that you may remove them far from their border. Coming on down in verse 9, proclaim you this among the Gentiles, prepare war, wake up the mighty man. Let all the men of war draw near, let them come up. Beat your plowshares into swords, your pruning hooks into spears. Let the weak say, I'm strong. You know, there's a war fever that's going to hit the Middle East. They're going to be, instead of what's going to happen after Christ's return, instead of converting war implements into agricultural usage, they're going to start converting agricultural things into war implements. They're all going to be getting together and doing this, and I think it's a rather interesting statement, let the weak say I am strong. You know, you never hear any more bellicose statements than from some of these weak Arab states over there in the Middle East. The smaller they are, the more bellicose they sound as they issue forth all their proclamations of what they're going to do. Assemble yourselves and come, all you heathen. Gather yourselves round about. Thither cause your mighty ones to come down, O Eternal. Let the heathen be wakened and come up to the valley of Jehoshaphat, for there will I sit to judge all the heathen round about. Put in the sickle, the harvest is ripe. Come, get you down, the press is full, the fats overflow, their wickedness is great. Multitudes, multitudes in the valley of decision, for the day of the Lord is near in the valley of decision. The sun and the moon shall be darkened, the stars shall withdraw their light. The Eternal also shall roar out of Zion, utter his voice from Jerusalem, the heavens and the earth shall shake. The Eternal shall be the hope of his people and the strength. The children of Israel, so shall you know that I am the Eternal your God, dwelling in Zion, my holy mountain. Then shall Jerusalem be holy. See, it's not right now, but it shall be. Because the time is going to come when Jesus Christ is going to return. At that time, he's going to begin here, and it describes the warfare that is going to take place, the judgment that is going to take place right there in the area of Jerusalem. Let's notice another bit of information as to part of what's going to happen between now and then. In Zechariah chapter 14, verse 1, behold, the day of the Eternal comes, and your spoil shall be divided in the midst of you. For I will gather all nations against Jerusalem to battle, and the city shall be taken, and the houses rifled, and the women ravished. And half the city shall go forth into captivity, and the residue of the people shall not be cut off from the city. So evidently the city is once again to be divided. It has been divided of recent date as the old and the new city divided between east and west. The Jews recaptured the east part, the old city. Evidently it's once again going to be divided. The half the city that will go into captivity, undoubtedly the Jewish half, it's going to be gone into captivity. The residue of the people shall not be cut off. Then shall the Lord go forth after that. That's an event that is going to happen prior to the return of Jesus Christ. That's an event that is going to happen during the time period of the Great Tribulation, right at the beginning of it, when the armies are going to encompass Jerusalem. Then during that time, the city is going to be taken. Then after that, verse 3, shall the Eternal go forth and fight against those nations, as when he fought in the day of battle. And his feet shall stand in that day upon the Mount of Olives, which is before Jerusalem on the east. The Mount of Olives shall cleave in two. Jesus Christ is going to come back to that geographic location. Notice in Isaiah 40, a part of what we are to proclaim. A part of our message, is a part of our message yet for the future. Not fully a part of our message right now. Comfort you, my people, says your God. Speak you comfortably to Jerusalem, and cry unto her that her warfare is accomplished, that her iniquity is pardoned, for she has received of the Eternal's hand double for all her sins. The voice of him that cries in the wilderness, prepare you the way of the Lord, make straight in the desert a highway for our God. Every valley shall be exalted, every mountain and hill shall be made low, the crooked shall be made straight, and the rough places plain. The glory of the Eternal shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together, for the mouth of the Eternal has spoken it. And the boy said, cry. And he said, what shall I cry? And he said, all flesh is grass, and all the goodliness thereof is as the flower of the field, very temporary, very passing. Coming on down, the grass withers, the flower fades. You know, people, as we're compared here to like grass. We're very temporary. Verse 8, the grass withers, the flower fades, but the word of our God shall stand forever. You know, people pass, people come and go. But what God says is going to endure. O Zion, which bring good tidings. Or as it could be rendered, O you that tell good tidings to Zion. Referring here to us, to the church. Get you up into the high mountain. O Jerusalem, that brings good tidings. Lift up your voice with strength. You know, this have some kind of reference. How do we lift up our voice with strength? Well, I'll tell you, this has a lot to do with strengthening a voice. Makes a lot of difference to what you can hear. What strengthens a voice even more is something like radio transmission. Now here it talks about, O Jerusalem, that brings good tidings. Lift up your voice with strength. Lift it up, be not afraid, say unto the cities of Judah, behold your God. Now, I don't know how many of you remember in 1967, Six-Day War. I remember very clearly, I remember where I was, I remember everything about it, and I remember part of the excitement of that day. Because there had come a letter, if you remember, Mr. Armstrong, at that time, the old city of Jerusalem was a part of the Hashemite kingdom of Jordan. Mr. Herbert Armstrong had met several times with King Hussein of Jordan and had signed the largest radio contract in commercial radio history. We were going to be broadcasting with 1 million watts of power over Radio Jerusalem. And the first broadcast was scheduled to go out on Pentecost of 1967. Mr. Herbert Armstrong was in London, England. In fact, he was in a car en route from the Bricketwood campus to London's Heathrow Airport to fly to Jerusalem to make the first live broadcast that was to go out at noon that day from Jerusalem. And that morning, as he was on his way, as he was in the car en route to the airport, that is when the news came over the radio that war had broken out, right to the very day. And, of course, obviously the time was not yet right. The time had not yet come for the word of the Lord to go forth from Jerusalem, for Jerusalem to lift up her voice with strength, to say unto the cities of Judah, behold your God. That time had not yet come. That door was shut, and, you know, it had to have been shut right then. A matter of a few hours and the first broadcast would have already been made. I remember having read those co-worker letters, and, you know, I remember all of that comes back, you know, very clearly. I can remember where I was and everything when I heard that first broadcast of the news that war had broken out in the Middle East, realizing, of course, that Mr. Armstrong was on his way there and that broadcast was to go out. So we notice here something that is a prophecy for the future. The time for the fulfillment of this prophecy was not 1967. It says, O Zion, that brings good tidings, get you up to the high mountain. O Jerusalem, that bring good tidings, lift up your voice with strength. Lift it up, be not afraid. Say unto the cities of Judah, behold your God. Behold, the eternal God will come. So it is something that is to be fulfilled before Christ returns. Behold, the eternal God will come with strong hand, and his arm shall rule for him. And behold, his reward is with him, and his work before him. He shall feed his flock like a shepherd. He shall gather the lambs with his arm and carry them in his bosom, and shall gently lead those that are with young. Going on describing here the great God and the message that is to go out with strength from Jerusalem. A message of comfort to Jerusalem that is to go out yet in the future. A time that will come to speak comfortably to Jerusalem. To tell Jerusalem your warfare is accomplished. The time will be very soon when you will be the city of peace. We find this described right here. We go on back to the book of Micah. We can read a little bit of what Jerusalem will be after the return of Jesus Christ. Micah chapter 4. Verse 1, "In the last days it shall come to pass that the mountain of the house of the Eternal shall be established in the top of the mountains. It shall be exalted above the hills, and people shall flow unto it. And many nations shall come and say, Come and let us go up to the mountain of the house, to the mountain of the Eternal, to the house of the God of Jacob. And He will teach us of His ways, and we will walk in His paths, for the law shall go forth of Zion, and the word of the Eternal from Jerusalem." That is the time of the restitution of all things. The time when the government of God will be restored to this earth and will go forth from Jerusalem, when the city of peace will be a city of peace. Notice also back in the book of Zechariah chapter 8, verse 1. "Again the word of the Eternal of Hosts came unto me, saying, Thus says the Eternal of Hosts, I was jealous for Zion with great jealousy. I was jealous for her with great fury. Thus says the Eternal, I am returned unto Zion and will dwell in the midst of Jerusalem. And Jerusalem shall be called a city of truth, and the mountain of the Eternal of Hosts, the holy mountain. Thus says the Eternal of Hosts, there shall yet old men and old women dwell in the streets of Jerusalem, and every man with his staff in his hand for very age. And the street of the city shall be full of boys and girls playing in the street thereof. Thus says the Lord of hosts, if it be marvelous in the eyes of the remnant of this people in these days, should it also be marvelous in my eyes, says the Lord of hosts. Thus says the Eternal of hosts, behold, I will save my people from the east country and from the west country. And I will bring them, and they shall dwell in the midst of Jerusalem, and they shall be my people. And I will be their God in truth and in righteousness." You know, that prophecy has yet to be fulfilled. From the time that Zechariah the prophet spoke it until now, that prophecy has not yet been fulfilled. Jerusalem has not yet been safely inhabited. It has not yet truly become the city of peace. Pictured here as old people and young people walk and play in the streets of Jerusalem. Time when God is going to bring His people, bring them there, will dwell in the midst of Jerusalem, that they will be God's people, and God will be their God in truth and in righteousness. But that day is going to come. God will yet choose Jerusalem. God began His creation using that geographic focal point. We read here that it is called the Holy Mountain. The mountain of the Lord of hosts, the holy mountain. We read back in Ezekiel 28 that Lucifer was cast as profane from the holy mountain, from that location of Mount Zion, from that place where God's government went out to the earth, where at various times God's government has been established, and when Jesus Christ returns, that will be the location of it. In fact, that will be the location of something even yet to come after that, because we find that as we go through the book of Revelation through chapter 20 that describes the return of Jesus Christ, the subsequent reign for 1,000 years, and the resultant judgment of the dead, small and great, who not had an opportunity of salvation at the conclusion of the 1,000 years, they were judged. Those who have had their opportunity and rejected it, we find are here consumed in the lake of fire, verses 14 and 15 of Revelation 20, and in Revelation 21, verse 1, "And I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth were passed away, and there was no more sea. And I, John, saw the holy city, New Jerusalem. Still the same focal point. New Jerusalem, coming down from God out of heaven, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. And I heard a great voice out of heaven saying, Behold, the tabernacle of God is with men, and He will dwell with them. And they shall be His people, and God Himself shall be with them and be their God. And God shall wipe away all tears from their eyes, and there shall be no more death, neither sorrow nor crying, neither shall there be any more pain, for the former things are passed away. And he that sat upon the throne said, Behold, I make all things new. Coming on down in verse 7, He that overcomes shall inherit all things, and I will be his God, and he shall be my son. In verse 10, He carried me away in the Spirit to a great and high mountain and showed me that great city, the holy Jerusalem, descending out of heaven from God, coming down here to the earth, having the glory of God. Her light was likened to a stone most precious. Describes here the city with the gates, the 12 gates and the 12 foundations. The city that is to be the seat of the first fruits, where the bride of Christ is to reside, and from which the government of God will be administered over the earth, on into eternity and out into the entirety of the universe, as God Himself comes here. Because we find that God Himself shall dwell with them. God Himself shall dwell in the New Jerusalem that is going to come down from God out of heaven. That this is once again to be the focal point of history as far as God is concerned. We read, there are other places that we could go. You know, this is the city for which Abraham looked. And Abraham, in Hebrews chapter 11, where we talk about the men and women of faith, we read of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. We read that they dwelt in tabernacles. They dwelt in tents. But while they did, we're told that Abraham looked for a city that has foundations. In fact, it has 12 of them, recorded here in Revelation 21. A city whose maker and builder is God. Abraham confessed that he was a stranger and a pilgrim on the earth. Let's notice here, it tells us that Abraham sojourned in Hebrews 11:9 in the land of promises in a strange country, dwelling in tabernacles, in tents, with Isaac and Jacob. In verse 10, he looked for a city which has foundations, whose maker and builder is God. He died in faith, verse 13. Not having received the promises, but saw them afar off, embraced them, persuaded of them, confessed that he was a stranger and a pilgrim. He sought a country. Not the country from whence he had come out, but a country that was to come, a better country, which is heavenly. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God. So, we read here of the city for which Abraham looked. We're told, you know, we're in the same shape. We don't have. We're told in Hebrews chapter 13, verse 14, For here and now on this earth, we have no continuing city. We seek one to come. We don't have a continuing city right now. You know, Jerusalem is the focal point where God will establish His government. That's not where the government of God is going out right now. There's not a continuing city right now. You know, God's government is administered from wherever God's people are. And that might be, you know, in the lifetime of most of us, that might have been anywhere from Eugene, Oregon to Pasadena, California to Tucson, Arizona to you name it. You know, where God's church was, where God's government was. We have no continuing city. Abraham didn't have a continuing city, but we seek one to come. A city that is not going to pass away. A city that is not temporary, that is not going to be a transitory, illusory city of peace, but a city that will be truly a city of peace. It's a place that right now is a cup of trembling, a cup of poison, a burdensome stone to all that concern themselves with it. time is going to come when the word of the Lord is going to go forth from Mount Zion once again. The time is going to come when after the millennium, the New Jerusalem is going to come down to that location from God out of heaven, and that we will reign there, and the government of God will be established at that focal point. The time is soon coming when the city of peace will finally have peace.